short ball, flapping moose back and full scarcely past square leg. So this is cricket.
Victory to the Australians by 8 wickets.
Welcome to episode 8 of the Summer of Cricket with Straubs and Snew. It's been a bit of a delayed one. We've had scheduling conflicts, we've had technical issues, we've had all sorts of problems, but we're back, we're bigger than ever, and we're ready to get in for episode 8. And I say we because I'm joined by my co-host, as ever. Welcome, Vishnu.
All right, Vish. Straubs, it's been a while. We've had some very strange problems here in the ACT and the New South Wales.
If you can think of it, we've had it. We've had power outages because of heat. We've had storms. We've had scheduling conflicts. We had Skype. We had the recording software drop out on us.
We've had internet issues.
Everything.
Oh, God, everything. Horrible.
Touch wood. I mean, I'm assuming we're recording right now, but my God, who knows? But we'll press on under the assumption that we are, as we've always done, under the assumption that someone's listening. Yep. So we'll press into episode 8. We've got to cast our minds back a little bit now. We're just going to touch briefly on the one-day series in New Zealand, the Chapel Hadley Trophy. Not one to remember for the subpar Aussies.
No. I think both the selectors and quite a few of the players will probably be wanting to forget that series, probably other than Marcus Stoinis, really, who batted really well in that first game. But I suppose Sam Haslett will have somewhat fond memories of his ODI debut, but not much else to talk about in that regards. No real standout performances, and we lost both games, so
not a whole lot to get excited about, really. The selectors' decision to send, you know, very depleted squads over certainly probably played a big part in that. The Aussies, particularly with the bat, really failed to get too much going outside. As you said, Marcus Stoinis was phenomenal with his effort and got us so very close. Unfortunately, Mr. Hazelwood was run out, and not really his fault either. He had to go for the run; it was always going to happen. And of course, it just sort of turned out that he ended up being dismissed. And I believe, at the time at least, that was the first time he'd ever been dismissed in a one-day international.
Yep.
Just to add a little bit of insult to injury, So there's certainly not too much to write home about. 2-0 the series. Game two was a washout without a ball being bowled, so match abandoned there. And sad to say that, apart from Stoinis, is probably the highlight of the tour.
Yeah, probably the weirdest talking point, other than the actual selection of players, was why they didn't play that second game. A wet outfield, no way of actually drying it. The pitch was fine, run-ups were okay, but puddles in the outfield meant no cricket.
In this day and age, that's a bit of a shock as well, isn't it? I mean, if it's bucketing down rain, fair enough. No amount of technology available in world cricket right now is going to save you. But you look at particularly the fields here in Australia and in England, the effort that they can go to get still water off outfields now is phenomenal. And sometimes you quite often see some games here, and we've seen it in Sydney and Melbourne the last couple of years, within an hour or two of the rain stopping, the outfield is pristine again.
Usually the drainage,
so that was a bit disappointing.
Plus, you know, that heavy rope thing that they, you know, wick around the water with, and then you know, some kind of super sopper sponge kind of thing usually does the trick. But either they didn't have it, or it was overwhelmed.
That sort of technology hasn't made it across the ditch yet. a big rope being carried by a tractor hasn't made its way across the ditch yet. That's not a surprise, though.
Yeah.
You listen to, I don't know about you, but I watched a lot on telly for that series, but I found myself a couple of times listening to Radio Sport New Zealand, and listening to New Zealand radio, and I'm sorry if we have any Kiwi listeners, listening to New Zealand radio is like listening to Australian local radio like 30 years ago.
Yeah.
It's just little tin pot ads and like national radio, and it's got ads for like John's grocery store and stuff like that. It's like, this is a national radio? Wow. But it was kind of nice as well. It was a little bit more laid back. And if you take out the rampant bias, which I suppose other people have to deal with when they listen to Australian commentary, but if you take out the rampant bias, it was okay to listen to.
Talking about rampant bias, did you hear, what's his name, Bill Laurie, in that second T20 when we're playing...
I've heard all about it. I didn't actually get to watch a single.
He was just like, he'd left the Australian camp. He'd just like, you know what? Screw this. The Aussie side are useless. I'm going to support Sri Lanka. And he decided this probably in the 17th over. Yeah.
As you do. Well, you never. It's never too late to get on a winner. You know, even if it's three lengths away from the finish first, you're never too late to back a winner.
Seems not.
I think it might. I think from what I can gather, I think it might have been a bit of a nod to his old mate Tony Gregg,
probably,
who loved the little Sri Lankans. Yeah. He used to be quite fond of the Sri Lankans, old Tony Gregg. So it might have been a bit of a nod to his old sparring partner.
I don't know. I think Bill Laurie's just a purist in terms of like loving to see batsmen just take apart a bowling lineup. And when you had Moses Enriquez bowling three length balls in a row, getting smashed for two sixes and a four, we'll probably do that to most relative neutrals.
That's true. And I think for someone like Bill as well, who's so patriotically Aussie and is such a traditionalist of the game, seeing teams that are basically being put out without, you know, a host of the international stars.
Like, yeah, it was pretty much Australia A.
Probably, I think,
and not even the best Australia A.
Get a little bit upset about. Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's so many players all around the world at the moment. I mean, we've got players, you know, they come finishing up in New Zealand. They're off to Dubai and India, and we've got players here, there, and everywhere. And as you said, it's very much Australia A light almost playing and. Obviously, against for all their faults, Sri Lanka are a very good T20 side, and they do sort of get the job done in that format of the game.
Russell Arnold said at the end of the game, well, that's 5-0. Sri Lanka has won the last five T20 games against Australia in Australia.
They also had, that was the only joy they had on their recent tour of South Africa as well. Because they got drubbed in the Test series,
drubbed in the one days as well,
5-0 in the one days. Yeah, so obviously T20 is where it's at for Sri Lanka at the moment, which will probably frustrate them a little bit not being able to convert it to the longer formats. But they're very much a hard to beat T20 side. So we may as well talk about it. We're obviously 2-0 down after the first two games. How did you feel about? The second game in particular, and Cardinia Park in Geelong as an international.
It's really
venue.
Nice to hear that name again, because Geelong have sold the naming rights to Skilled, as in Geelong Football Club. So during the winter, it's always Skilled Stadium. But Cardinia Park is actually a really nice place to watch sport. It's been a long time coming to see them get a cricket match. I think especially when they had the triangular series or the quadrangular series, I always used to think they should have got a game that was normally played at the MCG and then leave the final for the MCG, make it a bit more special. But it was really nice to see them get a good game. They got a good turnout as well. All the Indian and Lankan residents of Melbourne and surrounding suburbs would no doubt have been there, and certainly were there by the looks of the telecast, which is good.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, obviously a Sunday night game's always a bit bit iffy in terms of scheduling, but yeah, they made it work. So yeah, it was really good that they had it there. The game was absolutely amazing. For the life of me, I did not think Sri Lanka would have gotten the win there. But yeah, like some really predictable bowling. I wouldn't say it was bad bowling. Like, predictable bowling equals, you know, horrible bowling in T20s nowadays. And some really clean hitting. A lot of people are blaming Aaron Finch in terms of captaincy. You know, for not instructing the bowlers to do things differently. But I'm not really too sure how much blame we can lay at his feet, given that, you know, someone like Moses Henriques, or Henriques, you know, he's Portuguese after all. I'm not too sure, you know, if we should be expecting more from him. He's quite an experienced player. Gets the job done for New South Wales, and pretty sure played for a couple of seasons at least in the IPL. So I really do think, you know, he should be suggesting what variations he can and should be bowling, especially at the death.
Yeah, there's got to be some onus on the bowlers. They have enough control over what they're doing to not be able to sit back and say, well, the captain didn't tell me to do this, or the captain didn't tell me to do that.
Yeah.
So there's got to be some, particularly death bowling. You're given that responsibility to finish out the innings. You're defending a total that, you know, could well have been enough to win the game at the end of the day, and probably should have been if the bowling had sort of matched that. And you've got to step up in that situation more than anything. So disappointing, and I don't like seeing Australia lose anything. It's not how I like to enjoy my cricket. So we'll move on. Obviously, the third T20 to come. The favourites would have to be Sri Lanka. I think that's tomorrow
night in Adelaide. Yep. Well, the thing is, we had them 7 for 120 in the 15th over. So getting those last three wickets, or bowling 4 and a bit overs, and not letting them score 55. Yeah, it was very much in Australia's favour.
Oh, absolutely.
And then they, yeah, chucked it away. So
yeah, I think that's the best way to say it. Look, we are sort of, you know, it's without sort of brushing it under the table, we could probably treat this this T20 series like Cricket Australia have, and leave it in the rearview mirror pretty quickly. More importantly, we do have this tour of India that's basically underway. We're good to go. Everything's the preparations are done. It gets started on Thursday, 23rd. So I keep thinking today's Wednesday. Don't ask me why. I've been a day ahead both days this week, which is painfully annoying. So it's in Pune, or Pune?
Pune. Yeah.
Pune. There you go. I've heard it pronounced about 1,000 different ways. From Pune.
Shane Warne.
It's Pune. Oh, I can work with that. Yeah. Say Shane Warne and be like, yeah, we'll get him in Pune, boys. We'll get him in Pune, and then we'll smash him in Bengaluru. Yeah. So I love subcontinental tours. As a person who loves staying up late watching cricket, I absolutely love sitting up watching the cricket through as late as possible, and generally falling asleep to the telly and waking up and catch up the last hour's play or whatever the case may be. But I went through that. I go through that a lot. I'm also a huge cycling fan. I love Tour de France. I get up and watch the Tour de France every night during. Stay up and watch it during the tour. And I went through a phase where I fell asleep every night, but I always woke up with like 15 kilometres to go, almost on cue. 15 kilometres to go. So I would kind of miss it, and I just wake up and I'd be right up for the exciting bits. This is perfect. And of course, had no productivity the following day because I was dead tired. But I'm imagining the same sort of thing from the cricket. But we'll play that by ear. What about yourself? I'm assuming you're going to be...
it's a good thing I've got Foxtel on my phone. Cool. Yeah, it's going to be very, very interesting. I think the timing will be a bit better than, you know, watching the Ashes or the Tour de France, because they're only, what, 5 hours behind us. So what's that, 10 a.m. starts at 3:30, 4-ish. And then, yeah, 4 to about 11, I think. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's about
it's
that.
Actually decent viewing times.
Yeah, it works out, particularly during the coming home from work. You sort of you'll be able to jag a bit on the radio and deal with that. And I believe it's going to be on ABC Grandstand.
Yes, they finally sorted it out.
Thank God, because it should not have been this
difficult. Yeah, surely not. Like, given the closeness of our diplomatic relationship, surely it couldn't have been that hard to broadcast, but
it seemed more difficult than what it was, but that'll be the good thing, I'm thinking, because it takes me about an hour to get home, so sit in the car, smash out a bit of cricket on the way home, and then settle in while I put the bride to work on dinner. So
yeah,
she's not going to listen, thankfully, so I can say that.
Maybe I should incentivize her to listen to this. I'll even make a note of the time.
Thanks, mate. I appreciate it. Now, looking into the test, we've obviously had Australia take on India A in a 3-D game. Some interesting performances there.
Yeah. There've been some interesting performances with the bat. I'm not too convinced about our bowling capabilities. And, still need 20 wickets from somewhere. And the thing is, like, there are some interesting things that I kind of look into, right? So we bowled 91, 92 overs. Lyon bowled pretty much a third of them. And he went for an economy of 5.6. And that's against, India A. We pretty much let a guy score a double century at almost a runner ball.
Shreyas
Iyer. He's a fair way away from, well, I suppose, playing for India A, you can't say he's a fair way away from playing for India, but he's certainly not the next cab off the rank. So the fact that he's scoring a double, 202 off 210 balls, 27 fours and 7 sixes.
It's not great.
You can just imagine what, Rahane, Kohli and, the big dogs are going to do.
I mean, you look at Nathan Lyon's figures, 28.5 overs, four wickets, which is obviously great, but four for 162.
Yeah.
And there was a period there, a five-over period, where he was hit for 57 runs, and most of that was by the tail, from what I'm led to believe.
Yeah, what's his name? Krishnappa Gautam,
He hit 74 for 68 pieces. 10 fours and 4 sixes.
Yeah. I suppose the only kind of upside is that neither Stark nor Hazelwood played. So in terms of the mix of the bowlers, we may have more firepower, in reserve.
We only had the two quicks in inverted commas with Jackson Bird and Mitchell Marsh, and the rest of the bowling was split out across Nathan Lyon, Steve O'Keefe, and Glenn Maxwell.
So I don't know how far we want to read into it, but certainly Lyon's figures nor spells are very impressive. And with the bat, I think, is the interesting kind of quandary or conundrum. Renshaw opened the batting, 11 in the first innings, 10 in the second. So never didn't do anything great. But then again, Warner didn't do that much better either. The surprising.
So you take out the Steve Smith and Sean Marsh scores. Yeah. And I mean, I know Mitchell Marsh got 75, Wade 64, Hanscom 45, all in the first dig. Nobody really cracked much in the second dig at all. Peter Hanscom got 37. Yeah. I don't think it was just more getting it over and done with at that point. They didn't even bother to send Steve Smith out. It finished up pretty average, but there's not a lot to write home about. Smith and Marsh both sort of fought pretty hard for their wicket and both retired out, so I suppose you can look at it and say, well, it could have been very different had those guys both gone on to make big scores.
I think, we both said this last time, isn't that you can't get to 75 or 100 and kind of give up or stop. You have to go on and make a double 100 or at least 150. I think it would have been nice to see at least one of them do that if they had the time. Obviously, a three-day game, you know, you're trying to push it along to get everyone a go, but I'm not too sure if 100 against India A's bowlers really, proves a lot in terms of selection as well as, technical and temperamental capability.
It's not a huge indicator that either of them will have successful performances in the four tests to come. I mean, I think we're all pretty confident in what Steve Smith can do, and I'm sure Marsh has this tag at the moment that he is supposedly a subcontinental specialist, but whether or not that sort of continues is going to be sort of predicated on the next four or five fixtures across the subcontinent. So as you said, I probably would have liked the same. I would have liked to see them, even both of them, just bat on. You don't lose anything by really getting your eye in, particularly for someone like Sean Marsh, who's been in and out of the side for so long. You don't lose anything by batting out and building a big score. In fact, probably a tremendous confidence boost, and probably puts some miles under the belt, I guess.
Yeah, I suppose the only kind of counter logic, which kind of sometimes does go around in cricket circles, is that you don't want to score all your runs in a game that doesn't count. If they are kind of nailed in starters, you don't want to be spending too much time out in the sun tiring yourself. But that said, I think it's a bit strange that we didn't see Khawaja.
Particularly if you're going to drop him.
Yeah.
There's almost a suggestion there that if you're going to drop him for Marsh, you put both of them in there and give him the opportunity to give them both the opportunity and say, right, maybe take a David Warner or someone out, put one of them at the top of the order and have the other at first drop. I don't know. I mean, obviously Warner would have liked the run out as well, and certainly looks like there's still some cobwebs there. But
to be honest, I suppose hindsight's 20/20. But I would have let Hanscom have the break, because he's nailed on to bat at five, five or six, depending on the order, but.
Yeah,
if it's going to be two from Renshaw, Sean Marsh and Khawaja, you should at least give them an opportunity to succeed. And then if all three of them succeed, it's completely on you.
That's it. That gives you the perfect headache almost, in that you know that whichever way you go, you've got justification at the very least. If they do fail, you go, well, look, they had form on the board coming in, and they perform well in these conditions against India A. So, it'll be interesting, and I'm sure there'll be plenty to talk about as the sort of series goes on, but I'm sort of conscious that we're going to be pressed a little bit for time this week. moving on, I do want to talk a little bit about the BBL and the WBBL finals. Obviously, the Perth Scorchers for the men. They seem to really know how to do BBL.
Yeah, I think Justin Langer is probably the best coach of 2020. Probably, I would even say, in the world. Putting it out there, just in terms of cumulative average results, how many finals they've made and how many of them they've won. It's pretty consistent. I think that I would say selection philosophy of being very Perth based probably makes life easy for them as well. So, there's no problems assimilating players.
I think it's almost there's no betting problem, problems. It's all sort of just business as usual.
Like, they don't have a big name superstar like Kevin Peterson, who swans in a few days late. Doesn't play the first couple of games because he's playing golf in Dubai or something crazy ass like this. He rarely picks players that are, going overseas to play for their countries. Like, this year they had David Willey leave, but in the past, whenever they've picked an international, it's usually been one that's going to be available for the whole series. But it's been a bit.
They're the same with their Australian based players as well. They don't sort of have too many guys that you're going to lose midway through the tournament to ODI commitments and things like that. And bring in someone like Mitchell Stark, and they've done it in the past with Brad Hogg, having someone like that in who you're going to get the games out of. He played above and beyond himself. Mm. He was phenomenal for a lot of
the fixtures. And, a guy like Mitchell Johnson, worth his weight in gold in terms of T20 performance, especially on Australia's bouncy pitches. And especially when you're up against batsmen that aren't of international test quality, 145 Ks, swinging the ball, the width of the bat, it's going to get wickets because no one really wants to move their feet forwards to a guy bowling that quick.
Of course not.
And, you get a short ball middling off, I doubt that many batsmen are going to back themselves to pull or cut or whatever.
Yeah, no, he entirely. And, we saw what he did towards the end of his test career against some really well-established test cricket batsmen. So the performances that he can put in against players who aren't quite at that level, he's certainly absolutely deadly when he wants to be. So he was a great addition. I think he played a big role. And I think, they were probably one of the more consistent teams. Everyone sort of got a bit jazzed up about the Stars at a point there, as they seem to every year. But the Scorchers were just probably a
couple of months. Think of this phenomenon of winning a home final? I don't know if I like that.
As in winning the right to host it. I get where you're coming from in that it's almost an extra too big an advantage to the team that does get it. But I also look at it and say, you take that game, if you pick a venue before the final or before the tournament and say the final's going to be played at the MCG or the SCG, sure you can build the occasion around that, but if it's played at the MCG and the final happens to be between the Brisbane Heat and the Perth Scorchers, you're going to limit the crowd that you're going to get in such a big way. I can't see Cricket Australia moving away from playing it at home.
Do we not think that in the next couple of years we'll be able to kind of compensate for that in the same way like the AFL has? And the NRL?
Potentially. But I still think there's a bit of...
Or do you not think people will travel?
No, I don't think they will. I think a lot of people still see the BBL as a bit of light entertainment. And, myself have done a trip to Hobart to watch the Thunder once, back when we were terrible. The first time we were terrible, not the most recent time, as in last season. Our first stint of terribleness. We have two stints of terribleness punctuated by a glorious title.
That'll do.
First stint. Yeah, that sums up the Thunder pretty well. So we sort of travelled, and there was four of us that went down, and we were literally the only four people in Hobart there to cheer on the Thunder. And you really felt that as we got absolutely belted. The locals took a very good liking to our fluoro green, which became very high vis very quickly as we were, particularly as we were walking home and leaving Blundstone. But they're lovely people, the Tasmanians, so it was pretty. It wasn't a real issue, but I don't see, like, you look at it now and you see the NRL grand finals in Sydney. If Melbourne and Brisbane play in the grand final, you know you're still going to sell it out, because it in itself has built that status of an event. It's built the status where the fans will travel for that. I don't see it right now. I think if you put it at the MCG or the SCG or the Gabba, wherever you want to put it, I don't think fans will travel. I don't think away fans travel to the home final as it is. Not many of them anyway. I think the only time you would see a good turnout in that regard is if you had a Melbourne or Sydney derby in the final.
Yeah.
You would see a good turnout of sort of both fans. But at this stage, I don't think that loyalty's there. I don't think that...
Investment.
It is. That's exactly the right word. You know, there's an innate investment in a lot of sports because we've been going to games for 30, 40, 50 years. The cricket is great, but most people... There's a few people that'll travel, of course, but you know the cricket's going to come to Sydney. It's going to come to Melbourne. It's going to come to Brisbane. It's going to come to Adelaide. And it works.
And it's almost a better viewing spectacle on TV. So why would you travel to go watch it? It's probably
another problem. Again, that's another fair point. Yeah, I can't see it getting away from the current format anytime soon. Purely because of that. I think they've got it set up now so that they can maximise gate revenue wherever they play the final, because they know that it's going to be predominant home crowd. And I think they would love it to be a Melbourne or a Sydney derby in a final. That would be the ideal scenario for Cricket Australia and the BBL. But until one or both of those halves get their acts together, then it's not going to happen. But at this stage, I think we're sort of set with the current format for the foreseeable future.
Yeah. It's good to also see Maxi Klinger finally get some recognition.
Finally, yes. Nearly 37.
Yeah.
In case you didn't know that from the ridiculous amount of times it's been mentioned since he got selected.
Adam Voges retires from the game and his kind of contemporary kind of replaces him.
I had not thought of it like that. And I literally wrote a retirement piece on Adam Voges. I never even gave that a thought in that sort of frame. That's rather amusing when you think of it like that. Normally you think of the old bloke's giving way and you've got these young fellas coming through, but you've got to get out of the way because 36-year-old Michael Klinger's barnstorming his way through.
Yeah,
he has earned it. It's not like a body of work Oscar nomination or an Oscar win after someone like Leonardo DiCaprio gets snubbed for some great roles and finally gets one for one that's not anywhere near the caliber of some of his other roles, and it's more like we just had to give it to you. You finally earned it. Michael Klinger has gone out and he's consistently.
Yeah, he's probably earned it for the last 5 or 6 years across multiple formats, and finally gets his call up. Probably didn't do too much wrong in terms of his two appearances for Australia, but. Yeah, it will be interesting to see if they keep him on going into the World T20.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Do you think they will? Do you think he stays on for the World T20, or do you think they go, well, you know, we sort of gave you this little tribute period to get that cap, but now we're
It does depend, I think, on who's doing the selections. If Justin Langer has a fair say in it, I think they'll keep him on, because I think he values... kind of the temperament with which Klinger approaches the T20. So he'll put away bad balls at the start, but he won't take unnecessary risks until he's, you know, set a decent base for himself and the team. So he can pretty much bat with anyone who's willing to take the crazy risks at the start. So if you imagine Klinger plus David Warner, and then followed by Khawaja and Steve Smith, that would be one hell of a top four.
Oh, yeah. And I think as a setup at the moment, Australian cricket, I think they like having foils open the batting. Like we had it with Chris Rogers and David Warner, then they moved to Renshaw with David Warner eventually, and very much, you know, polar opposites in the way that they approach their time at the crease. And obviously Maxi Kling is someone that seems to fit that secondary mould as well.
So, well, obviously, if he's getting bad balls to his strength, he's going to put them away, which you have to do. Mm-hmm. But he's also, you know, smart enough not to go taking too many risks right from the off.
Yeah, he's very much, I think, he's very much more in the mould of a manager.
On the field,
at the crease. Yeah, he's very much sort of managing his time at the crease. As you said, hitting those ones that do need to be hit, but also ensuring that he's there, and sort of a little bit more of a traditional, as much as you can say it in T20 cricket, a little bit more of a traditional opening batsman that's going to see that as the primary role and getting through and being there a little bit longer than potentially need be with particularly someone like David Warner at the other end, who could be, you know, 100 in a session in Test cricket, or could be out first ball flashing the blade at one that's 3 foot down leg side.
Yeah. So. I think he understands also, you know, momentum in T20. There's probably nothing worse than getting off to a bad start in a T20 game because they're so hard to rescue.
Oh, yeah. Hey, dude, you're talking to a Sydney Thunder fan.
Yeah.
I know nothing. I know very little other than bad starts.
Oh, Watson wasn't always that bad. Watson and Callum sometimes got...
They were all right. We won a title when we had those two together. It was more our Curtis Patterson, Ryan Gibson, Jai Lenton, whoever days, where sometimes it hit, sometimes it was very, very
dour. That's, I suppose, what you get if you, you know, just plumb the depths of Sydney grade cricket for your opening batsman.
Still the best grade cricket. I love me some Sydney grade. I'm all jazzed up to get down to Howell Oval and watch some summer Panthers down here as they come back. The Penrith Panthers in the grade. Absolutely love Howell Oval. Is one of the best afternoons you'll ever have watching grade cricket.
I'll take your word for it. I shan't join you.
Mate, I'll sum it up in one phrase: phenomenal chicken schnitzel rolls.
Okay.
Just phenomenal. Forget about all the action. It's worth it just for the chicken schnitzel rolls, mate. Got to touch on it. Women's BBL. The Scorchers couldn't do the double. The Thunder's double history lives. I've got to cling on to something.
I suppose if you can't retain it, just don't lose the title, I suppose.
Bit of history.
Yeah, I think women's big bashes, I really think it's, well, women's sport in general is in a bit of a weird spot at the moment. Like, it's kind of flavour of the month or season, but I think they've got to kind of grow a bit quicker. Especially watching the women's T20 side, the Australian side, go for it. They play a really good standard of cricket for women's cricket, but not enough people are watching, in my opinion, especially at the ground.
No, it's the big problem. I mean, as much as we all like sitting at home watching live sport, it's always better when there is a big crowd there as well. If you can sit and watch a sporting event, if you know there's a big crowd there, there's a bit of atmosphere, it does wonders for the overall product on the TV. So I think that's the sort of next big step. And double headers were a good idea. It's probably a bit too big of a gap between the games to make it viable for mine, because you're going to get there and watch three. The whole idea of T20 cricket is that it's almost snack-sized cricket. And if you're going to make a whole day out of it and go for both games, you really need to be in a position where you're not going to have to wait. I think it was like 45, 50 minutes between games. I mean, it's just too long. If you've got kids, you've got something like that, you can't entertain kids for that long. before the next game kicks off. They're bored. There's only so much running around on the hill you can do. There's only so much of this and that. I think it needs to be a little bit quicker. I think there needs to be potentially look at trying to fill that gap with a few things. But the time is to do it now because, as you said, in terms of popularity, women's sport across the board is probably at its highest peak in my memory anyway.
Yeah. It's the netball, rugby sevens, cricket, AFL, you know, it's all going well, but in terms of making that next step and really, really becoming professional, I think there are some small tweaks that need to be made. And whether or not they do so will be kind of critical.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. On to our next story. We had the IPL auction today.
Oh, yeah.
Have you had a chance to cast your eye
I saw
that?
Ben Stokes go for $2.8 million Aussie dollars, which is kind of crazy.
Yes. Are you in the middle of a thunderstorm at the moment? Or?
Don't think so.
I've got heaps of noise coming, but that's all good. I don't know whether anyone else can pick it up, but I'm copping it big time.
Sorry, man. I don't know.
But it's all good. Yeah. No, it's all good. I just want to make a joke about it. Because if people do hear it, they'll know that at least I was aware of it. If not, then they'll be like, stop your whinging, get on with it.
Yeah, I think the big names, what do we call them? It's not really a transfer fee, it's just the wages that the contract fee. I think, yeah, some of them make no sense to me. Like Pat Cummins, for all his raw talent and raw pace, I didn't see it working so well for him, especially over in subcontinental conditions. Like, really, I don't think he's worth that much.
How much did he go for?
$670,000. Yeah, something crazy. Give me one sec. I'll pull up the list.
Yeah, it was $671,000. So. Not a bad pay packet. He's gone to the Delhi Daredevils, who also bought. I mean, talk about focusing on bringing in some talent. Kagiso Rabada, Pat Cummins, Angelo Matthews, Corey Anderson, a bunch of Indians. Navdeep Sahni, I know he played in the for India A. He's a name that rings a bell. But they had a bunch of international spots open up, and they've gone out and flashed the cash. For me, I think the Kolkata Knight Riders have done well. They picked up Trent Bolt, Chris Wokes, Nathan Coulter-Nile, Darren Bravo, Rovman Powell, and in terms of local guys, they've got Rishi Dhawan, Ishak Jaggi, Sanjay Yadav, Sayan Ghosh for the relatively low sum of about $14,000 US.
Not bad.
It's the haves and the have-nots a little bit there. Mind you, I'd be happy to play 15, 16 games of T20 cricket for
You probably don't even have to play all 15.
No, to be fair, the guys we're looking at here, they're probably just going to... They're going to be netballers.
Yeah, some of them. what's his name move? Maxwell?
I cannot remember for the life of me now. I can't see him being picked up at all, to be honest with
you. Or is he still with... search through. What's it called? Punjab?
He's at Kings 11 Punjab. They have, under the captaincy of Murali Vijay, got Sean Marsh, Martin Guptill, Glenn Maxwell, Owen Morgan. Is it Chris Miller from South Africa? I can never remember his name.
David Miller.
David Miller and Chris Morris. The two most non-South African sounding names ever. David Miller and Chris Morris. And they've got Marcus Stoinis as well.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
It's a bit of hit and giggle. I enjoy a bit of the IPL.
Yeah, I suppose. I always find it's like there's too many games for any one game to be truly important enough to attract my attention.
Yeah,
and
that's
I kind of only, you know, go, oh, yeah, wait for it. Like, oh, the final's here, may as well watch that.
Yeah, I probably do a bit the same. I get into, and I do this with the other cricket that's televised, the Caribbean Premier League, or the Caribbean
CPL,
National, they
call
it. It's just something that's on, and you go, okay, it's on, I'll watch it. I don't sort of get out. I am nominally a Kolkata Knight Riders fan just because that's where Ricky Ponting went, and I've got somewhere a Kolkata Knight Riders Ricky Ponting jersey. Somewhere I paid a fortune because, as you can imagine, they weren't getting stocked at Rebel Sport, those ones, but I was able to get hold of that when it sort of all started first started kicking off, and anyone who knows me knows that I absolutely adore Ricky Ponting. So I was able to, and I thought, well, I may as well be a Kolkata Knight Riders fan. But they've changed their colours. They were black and gold when they came in. Now they're like a purple and gold sort of colour.
Yeah, I think, like, a lot of people in India think wearing black's unlucky. So when they were no longer successful, that would have probably been the first thing they would have changed. Yeah.
As you do.
It's not, you know, a problem that you've got like a 36-year-old Ricky Ponting still playing and a 35-year-old, you know, McCullum and like no bowlers. It's the fact that you were wearing black.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're wearing black.
And probably also like it's the hottest time of the year, April.
Yeah.
Probably not wearing black during you know, those hot afternoons playing cricket. Probably not a smart idea either.
I did like the look, I'm not going to lie. That black and gold really sold me on them. So, I don't know. Maybe I'll revisit my choice of IPL teams. I might, I could, you know, this time tomorrow, I could be a Kings 11 Punjab fan. I could be a Rising Pune Super Giants
fan. Oh, man, these guys make up the weirdest of names.
Yeah, they do not roll
off
the tongue.
No, not at all. Other than my team. Chennai Super Kings. But even then, why not just Chennai Kings? Like,
yeah, it's
like,
Super Kings. But
really,
the one that makes me laugh is Royal Challengers Bangalore.
Yeah, but I think Royal Challengers is like a brand. Yeah, I think.
Is it? I have no idea. I can put my hand up. I've never been in India. But it's so clumsy. Like Mumbai Indians, yep that works. It's almost like the New England Patriots sort of thing. Delhi Daredevils, that works 100%. Always love alliteration when it comes to sports teams. Yeah, exactly, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Spot on. So they're one step away from being the, I don't know, Washington Americans or whatever. Like, so, yeah, I like that. Delhi Daredevils works. I'm a big fan of alliteration when it comes to naming the old sports teams. But, yeah, some of them. Like Kings 11 Punjab.
Yeah.
It just it doesn't sound like a sports team. It sounds it's like a collection of words.
What do you think of...
I don't know. Maybe,
like the IP...
maybe it's racist.
No, it's not.
I don't know. That's an in joke I have with my cricket side has a couple of Sri Lankan boys and an Indian, and whenever I criticise them, I always go, I don't know, maybe it's racist if I say that, and it might just be as simple as just pitch the next one up, mate, and then they say what, and I say, oh sorry, maybe it's racist if I say it.
Okay.
Preeth, can you tell Sunuru to pitch it up, please? It's not racist if you say it.
Oh good.
So yeah, that was a little inside joke that sort of slipped out.
Good workaround.
We have a lot of fun. We have a lot of fun.
One thing I do finally like about the IPL is that they've got the exclusive window. So most of the countries around the world have said, okay, look, we're not going to schedule international cricket during the IPL because, you know, if you guys are paying our players $1 million for 6 weeks' work, we can probably afford to pay them a bit less. And I think that's one thing that they have to bring to the Big Bash and the Women's Big Bash, because I think the quality of the performance in the last couple of years in the Big Bash has kind of stagnated without internationals, and the WBBL really did seem to struggle with, you know, losing New Zealanders, South Africans, English, women. You know, they all disappear for a couple of weeks, even if it's for a bloody training camp. You know, the Big Bash teams can't keep them. So I think that's one improvement that Cricket Australia really has to get right and negotiate that exclusive window.
Yeah.
And then do, you know, the reciprocal arrangement when the ECB finally get their act together and, yeah, have their own domestic franchise cricket.
Eventually, when the counties finally relinquish control. a bit of control, which, yeah, don't hold your breath on that. Look, perfect segue. We'll just go straight into England. We've got no more Alistair Cook in terms of captaincy. We've
and
got
Ben
Joe
Stokes
Root
as vice captain.
The vice captain.
Cook, really good timing on his behalf. I suppose it was almost very predictable. Very much as Cook's captaincy has been. So it was, so it shall ever be, and so it has ended. So, yeah, very much picked the right time. He's given Root, you know, 6 or 7 test matches at home to get his on and off field captaincy style and tactics and everything sorted before the Ashes.
Yep. Yeah, yep. 7 tests, yeah. South yep. Africa and the West Indies both touring.
And then Stokes will kind of bring that. It's good to see someone who has that kind of energy and, I suppose, passion for cricket, you know, that visible passion, given like a proper leadership role without being asked to do too much. Like, I always thought Freddie Flintoff should have been England vice captain for a long time. But giving him the captaincy was probably a little, you know, one step too far. Because, you know, if you ask him to bat at like 5 or 6, bowl 20 overs a day plus, you know, be captain, it's just a drain of all of your cricket kind of resources, you know, mental, physical, tactical. Yeah, so it's really nice to see Stokes there and... given some authority. But yeah, Root as captain is going to be interesting because supposedly he hasn't captained a side since like under 14s. So.
I don't think he's all that popular amongst his fellow players either.
Yeah, I think he's kind of almost positioned himself for the captaincy.
It's Michael
Clarke too. Don't do anything. Well, I suppose even Clark was kind of flashy, like, beforehand. He had that kind of aura and personality.
But he was, like, flashy vanilla, yeah. though. Like, it was flashy, but it was boring.
Yeah, it was
flashy.
Like the flash car, the weird
because he
highlights.
Knew. I mean,
yeah.
everyone knew. Yeah.
Well, I suppose that does happen when the Chappell brothers say, well, he's our next captain after he's played one game. Well, half of one game. Scored 150 on debuts. Like, yeah, he's the next Australian captain. It's like, he may That's get it. Dropped in the next year. Just come to, you know, call your Jets. But I think Root's almost gone to that extreme of, you know, being almost like a politician in terms of don't say anything controversial, don't get into any trouble, just be good at what you do. And hopefully, you know, that works for him, but...
Well, no, hopefully
it's going to be
doesn't.
A... it's going to be... well, not against us. They can be, like, the number 2 team in the world. yeah.
Oh, no, I as much as I enjoy beating England, I enjoy beating
good.
England and then seeing them completely demoralised and getting absolutely beaten by everyone. I don't think there was a Bangladeshi in the world that celebrated harder than I did when Bangladesh beat them. And I like to see England lose anything from pick-up sticks to marbles to cricket.
Sure.
So. that might be both the Aussie and the Scotsman coming out of me all in one.
Probably. yeah, so it's going to be interesting to see, you know, that whole new generation of captains, you know, play against each other. I suppose that Root getting the captaincies, the last of the quartet, behind Corley, Smith, and Williamson. Will be interesting to see who South Africa turn to after De Villiers, in terms of their full-time, longer-term captain, because what's his name's not getting that. Well, he's not that young. Faf du Plessis, like 32 or something, right? Yeah, so...
You kind of forget. I only remember the other day that he had that Colpack spell.
Yeah.
He was young. He spent 4 years away over in England playing county cricket and then come back to the national setup. So you sort of forget because you feel like he hasn't been around that long. And in terms of test cricket, well, he really hasn't been around that long.
Yeah, he's a lot older than you thought, yeah. It will be interesting to see how Root goes, especially away from home, because, England at home have got, their natural advantages, which probably makes life pretty easy for a captain over there. That seven test period to kind of bed in, probably the hardest challenge will be fending off, reporters' questions about, oh, what's it like having Alistair Cook at first or second slip? Does he talk to you a lot? Does he give you a lot of suggestions? Blah, 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 chat. I think one thing, this new generation of captains have done really nicely so far, and probably the biggest thing that I'm in favour of is Corley getting the BCCI to finally start using DRS.
Yes, I was going to touch on this as our sort of last topic of the night, but finally some progress on the DRS in the subcontinent.
Yeah, he doesn't seem to use it all that well yet, but I suppose no better and no steeper learning curve than playing against Australia. It will be interesting to see how DRS copes with those spinning, turning wickets, especially Hawkeye or Ball Tracker or whatever they're calling it these days. I think there's a couple of brands. Just how Corley goes about using it, because I think now that has been introduced, it could go either way in terms of, getting one of their batsmen out for cheap. Or it could also mean, it could also mean...
You see it on
the flip. The other.
I can easily see it on the flip side where Coley or someone is on two or three and India are under the pump and he gets given not out and it's reviewed and he's given out. There could be
It's like, revolt. We're not using this ever again. Mid-series.
Mid-test, we are dumping this.
Yeah, that could be interesting. I think...
I kind of want that to happen now. Just
for the drama.
What happens. It's like morbid curiosity now.
My personal thoughts on predictions in terms of the tour, I have a bad feeling, if we're using DRS and we get a kind of dodgy LB and he tees it up and gets a reprieve and scores like a triple hundred. I think that's my worst nightmare in terms of DRS in India. Certainly going to be an interesting series going forward.
Absolutely. Looking way too far ahead, over the four tests, what's the prediction?
3-1. Yeah.
3-1 to India. Okay. I've given it some considered thought. I've sort of weighed up a lot of pros and cons, and I've come out and I've gone 4-0 Australia. Glenn McGrath never predicted anything short of a whitewash, and I'm not sure why I should either. So,
all right.
Until we lose a test, there's no reason we can't win them all.
Yeah, there's no reason we can't, other than that we're playing India in India.
And we may select both Marsh Brothers.
Yeah, both Marsh Brothers and not enough spinners.
Oh, good luck. Yeah. Okay, I've got predictions with caveats. No Marsh Brothers, 4-0 Australia. Two Marsh Brothers, 4-0 India. One Marsh Brother, 2-all.
Okay, all right. Yeah,
that's my caveats.
It's a good thing. Like both of us have finance backgrounds. We can build options around this. Derivatives. We can track this. But it's gonna be interesting. Like, do you think the selectors will go, you know, three quicks, two spinners, or... I think it was one of the Chapels that was saying, you know, if we're not going to pick two frontline spinners, we got to pick Maxwell.
I know they've said that, and I mean, I would never deign to think how the selectors will proceed, because they continually throw so many weird and wonderful selections.
All right, let me ask you this. What would you do if you were the selector?
Personally, and keeping in mind that I've sort of grown up on three fast bowlers and a spinner, regardless, I would have two spinners and three fast bowlers. I like the idea. I think if you can't do it with two spinners, you're not going to be able to do it with three. I don't think the third spinner dramatically changes things. For mine, you've got to have Hazelwood, you've got to have Stark. I would like to have another fast bowling option there, whether it's Jackson Bird or not. I think there needs to be someone else there that can come in and bowl some overs alongside a spinner. You don't want to always go to that two spinners operating at each end sort of thing. And I'd probably go O'Keefe and Lyon for the first test as my two spinners.
So wait, is that three quicks and two spinners?
Three quicks and two spinners.
Interesting.
No, hang on. What am I talking about? Two quicks and I would pick Sean Marsh.
Mitchell Marsh.
If James Faulkner was there,
I'm
going to
go
James
the whole hog then. Put it this way. Give me your 1 to 11. You can start either at the top or at the bottom.
Okay. 1 to 11. Good Lord. I have not given this anywhere near enough thought. Okay, so 1 is obviously Warner. 2, Renshaw. 3 for me would be Khawaja. 4, Steve Smith. 5, Peter Hanscom. 6, Mitchell Marsh. 7, see, I would have Peter Neville if I could, but Wade's the guy that's there. So, Wade. 8,
would you
O'Keefe.
Bat Mitchell Marsh higher than Wade?
Yeah, I think they're much of a muchness to mine. Yeah. I don't rate Matthew Wade's batting all that highly either. You probably have him slightly ahead. I've just sort of gone your traditional six keeper bowlers, but you could swap 6 and 7 around. Absolutely. O'Keefe, Lyon, Stark, Hazelwood.
Okay, yeah.
What about yourself?
I'd go Warner, Renshaw, Khawaja, Sean Marsh, Steve Smith, Hanscom as the keeper. So what's that? He's at 6. At 7, I would go Glenn Maxwell. And then Stark, Hazelwood, Lyon, O'Keefe. That's 11, yeah?
So slightly.
Well, no Matthew Wade. drop that tatty bike.
I don't know. I'm still not entirely convinced by Hanscom with the gloves. I think he can be an option there, but I know they've got Wade there for a reason, so I think they do definitely pick him. For mine, I would still have
Kevin Neville on the
side. Yeah,
if possible. I just think we need the extra bowling option and the extra batting option, and having pretty much a specialist wicketkeeper who's, you know, second string is the chat is probably not good enough.
But great chat.
It's great chat in English. I'm not too sure.
Will it translate?
Will, you know... witticism and sarcasm and sledging in English really be all that effective?
Are you telling me the street vendors around the grounds won't have nice Gary shirts everywhere, ready to go, misspelled, poorly stitched, the collars falling off on one side? They want the equivalent of $10 Australian for it. I can see this happening. This... Maybe I'm showing that I haven't been to India.
No, it'll happen.
I close my eyes, I can see that.
But not, like, sincerely. It'll be in jest. Almost as though, you know, you've got nothing else going for you, mate, so we made you a T-shirt.
Should they put that on the back of the shirt? Just turn around. You've got nothing going for you, so I made you
probably.
This T-shirt.
yeah, but, you know... I would love to see Matt Wade prove me wrong and score like a big double 100 and, you know, not drop a catch and not miss a stumping.
Yeah, you're being fanciful now.
Yeah.
You're just being... We come to this podcast, I don't mind a little bit of silliness,
yeah,
but this
and I
is
believe
just too
in,
far.
I believe
drops.
Gravity is, you know, doesn't need believing in, and Matthew Wade will not do that. So,
No, I'm very confident that Tasmania's favourite son, Matthew Wade... We'll not do that. Right, look, I think now's as good a time to draw a close on episode 8 as any. Unfortunately, I'm just about to try and squeeze dinner in before recording a Sydney FC podcast. We're going to talk about that delightful derby loss. So I'm looking forward to that. But it's been a pleasure to get back to it. I hope you've enjoyed the evening.
It's been great fun. Hopefully the listeners will... kind of excuse our delay. Hopefully we haven't lost too many of them.
You get what you pay for, guys.
Yeah,
you get what you pay
Patreon.com/ Yeah,
please keep
listening.
PayPal.com/ No. Yeah. Please keep listening. A Commonwealth bank account. Please keep listening.
This is online begging almost. All right, so we are kind of hoping to get back into a very regular Wednesday night recording. So if you've got any questions, comments, thoughts you'd like to share with us, hit us up on Twitter or on our Facebook page, The Summer of Cricket Show.
Yep, I'm at Undiluted7 on Twitter. You are?
United_Journal on Twitter.
Beautiful. And as you said, Summer of Cricket with Straubs and Stu on Facebook.
Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next Thursday.